Support for The Andrew Haynes Show is brought to you by LiveSource, the premier app for auctions at live events. LiveSource is an online auction and raffle platform that allows your fans and supporters to bid and buy from their phones and computers from anywhere. LiveSource cannot be simpler or more effective, which is why more than 300 professional and collegiate sports teams and thousands of charities and athletes utilize their services to generate revenue and collect data. If you sign up with LiveSource now, you will benefit from their lowest possible pricing and they'll waive their upfront fees. You can email them at hello@livesourceapp.com. That's hello, H-E-L-L-O, at livesourceapp.com. In today's episode of The Andrew Haynes Show, we sat down with David Schmall, the general manager of the O'Fallon Hoots of the Prospect League. David is an experienced general manager with a demonstrated history of working in the sports industry with a background in sales, media relations, radio, leadership, and sports marketing. A grinder from the beginning, he's been working his way up the industry since jumping into it in 2009. Here's his story. We hope you enjoy.
All right, back for another show. Excited, though, too, because we have a new sponsor for the show, LiveSource. App, it's a great platform for sports teams to do all their auctions online, raffles online. It's pretty cool. I've been using it with some of the teams I'm doing consulting with, and it's been a great tool to keep people connected, especially when most events can't even have fans. So it's a good way to engage with fans. But today I've got someone who's been around, and I've talked to him, I think, once or twice before. We've know some of the same people. So it's really cool to kind of see his journey. So I've got David Schmall with me, who is with the O'Fallon Hoots. Okay.
I got it right. Yeah.
I almost said the River City Rascals because that's what I'm used to, but up in my old stomping grounds in St. Charles, Missouri, right outside St. Louis. How's it going?
It's going great, Andrew. I appreciate it. How are you?
Doing real good, man. I appreciate you you jumping on with me. It's fun just hearing some of your stories before we got started too. So it's gonna be good. I always like to just kind of go through, everyone's journey, how they kind of got started and where they're from on the way up. So why don't you take it away?
Yeah. So I grew up here just outside of St. Louis in Fenton, Missouri. And, I didn't really know, like any, college kid, I didn't know what I wanted to do. And I had always, when I was a kid, I really wanted to always do sports broadcasting. I wanted to be a play-by-play guy. I grew up listening to Ken Wilson, who at one point was one of the owners here in River City. And, I always just wanted to be a hockey play-by-play guy. It was a dream. And I always thought it was a pipe dream. Like, I'm never going to actually be able to broadcast pro hockey. And, when I finally started realizing that I did want to go into the sports industry, I was pretty heavy into my political science degree at Murray State University, and really was not happy with that path, and ended up going to an advisor and saying, like, hey, I don't want to do this political science thing. It's just not for me. I really want to follow a passion, and that passion being sports. And she was like, well, don't change majors. Don't do anything crazy right now. The best thing that you can do to graduate on time is just get experience. And that was the best piece of advice that anybody could have given me. And it's a piece of advice that I passed down to all of our interns that we have, is just get experience. And so I just sent application after application after application to just try and get an internship somewhere near-ish Murray State. And ended up getting really lucky and getting an internship down in South Haven, Mississippi, with the Mississippi River Kings, then of the Central Hockey League. And so I did an internship there, made a lot of great connections, a lot of great friends. So I interned there, and then I interned in the ticket sales department with the St. Louis Blues, interned in the was a reporter for our NPR affiliate on campus at Murray, and then couldn't find a job after graduation, and ended up taking an internship with the Indiana Ice of the USHL in their hockey operations and media department. Still couldn't get a job after all that. There was something going on. It should have been a sign.
When those internships, were they paid or were they volunteer?
Three of them were unpaid. Okay. One, the reporter position on campus was my only paid position. So, you know, three unpaid spots, two of them over the summer. I was, you know, when I was in St. Louis and doing the Blues job, I would go to the Blues internship from like 10 to 4. Then I'd go to my part-time job working at a Dairy Queen at night and then repeat. So, I mean, I was working like 50-ish hours a week just to have money and then also get that experience, which was, it was invaluable. I mean, it was something that it really taught me a lot about, you know, the Blues internship gave me a lot of experience on the major pro side, because I had already had the River Kings experience. And I talked to so many interns about the experience, not just from an on the job, but what you want to do in your career. I mean, I gravitate now after that Blues experience, I gravitate a lot more toward the smaller office, minor league feel. I love
corporate.
Yeah, it is. And I love that. And so that Blues experience really gave me that. And then also just the grind of the hours. Like, yeah. I mean, that's just the nature of sports at this point. So, So after I finished up in Indiana, I was going online. I was actually visiting a girlfriend when I was in Michigan, and I saw that the River Kings were looking for a broadcaster. And I was like, oh my gosh, like what?
My dream.
This is incredible, right? And so I just shot him a text, and long story short, ended up, it was on a Sunday that I got the heads up that, hey, you know, yes, come down for an interview. So I went down, I interviewed on Monday. They had their kids' day game on Tuesday morning, broadcasted the kids' day game. He offered me the job after that. And I was like, you know, I'm going to do this for 6 months and I'm going to be the best thing ever. And I'm going to be in the National Hockey League in 6 years. Well, 6 years later, I was still in Mississippi. You know, it was just such a great spot for me to be at the time, to be able to get my feet wet. And the other thing that I had learned in my internships, and one of the reasons why I wanted to be in minor league sports, was you get an opportunity to get your hands in a lot of different departments. And so with not only all my internship experience, but also with my time spent in Mississippi, I went from broadcaster, and then I was director of business, and then general manager. And then in 2017, it was my now wife and I were engaged, and we were looking at what the future was, and job opened up in O'Fallon, Missouri with the River City Rascals for VP of ticket sales. And I, at the time, I was like, this is such a unique opportunity, because I was looking at who was working here, and as I'm applying, I was like, if I get this job, we're going to have three people in the office with GM experience. And I can fit in the ticket sales role. I can have my ticket sales department, and we can come in and we can rock it. And this is the best spot for me to be. It's close to home. We wanted to live near family, and ended up getting fortunate enough to get the position and stay here. And then was even luckier when the Rascals ceased operations and the Hoots came in, was even more lucky to be able to stay. It's been a wild journey for now. I guess we're going on almost 11 years since my first internship, which is absolutely insane. But it's been such a crazy, fun ride. It's not been without stress. I don't think anybody in the sports industry can say it's not been without stress, especially this last 12 months. But it's been awesome.
Yeah. Well, and it's like when you were talking about kind of your journey with the like the internship and trying to find that job, you know, it reminds me of like almost like the players,
right,
that are kind of trying to make it to the NHL or whatever. And it's like they kind of have that same struggle. They're training, they're doing all this and that, not making any money, having to work, you know, different jobs or whatever, you know, just to make that, you know, happen. So, you know, I definitely think that's kind of cool, you know, when you look at it, but it's tough. And that's what a lot of people don't realize. I think sometimes, you know, kids coming out of college, they kind of are okay, well, I graduated. Where's my job? You know, like, let me get something. Why has nobody hired me?
Yeah, it's so interesting to now be on the other side, right? And to be giving that advice of, because I give the advice all the time. If you have an opportunity to get in the door somewhere, get in the door. Take advantage of that opportunity, even if it's not the perfect job and something that you can see yourself being in for 50 years. Get in there, get experience, get familiar with the people, because they're going to become your network base. I turned down jobs when I was unemployed because I was like, I'm going to be a broadcaster. I'm going to do it. I'm going to figure it out. I'm going to make it happen. And I look at that, what I did, and I'm like, it worked out for me. I don't know if it would work out again. I don't think if you simulate that, those chain of events 100 times, it might only work once. And I just got lucky. Because it's all about your network, and you can get in and you can really build that network, do a great job. Maybe you stay there for a year, 2 years, figure it out, get some life experience. And who knows, you might even love it. I remember I said I was never going to do sales. I will never forget, I looked at our VP of sales in Mississippi, and he's like, so what do you want to do? I was like, I want to be a broadcaster. He's like, you should learn to sell. I'm like, never going to do that. Never going to do it. Because he offered me at one point, he's like, hey, why don't you come down and sell? And I was like, nah, I'm never going to sell. 2 years later, I'm on the phone making cold calls, loving it, having a blast. And it's just, you just never know. Once you actually get into it, you really never know until you actually get your hands dirty and do it.
Yeah. And I always kind of same message is like, get as many internships as you can, kind of try to figure out what you like, what you don't like. But more than anything, like you said, relationships, it's like, I've been in it almost 20 years. So I look out and I see all these different relationships where, you know, somebody might've been an intern all the way, you know, on up. And it's, it's definitely important, especially as, you know, if I look to launch another team, where am I going to go? I'm going to go right to my network first.
Yep.
And I'm going to find somebody that I already know has the right mindset. They already, you know, yada, yada, yada. And so it's like, it's a big help. It's hard if you don't have that network.
It is. And I mean, when I applied up here, I mean, talking about interns and relationships, somebody that you and I both know, I used a former intern as a reference. Actually, I think I used two former interns as references to come up here on the job. I used Ryan as a reference. And
Our sweet baby. who declined to come on my show, by the
way.
Did
he really?
He says that the Tampa Bay Buccaneers don't allow their staff to do that or something. Or he's got to get it approved.
Oh, man.
That sounds like BS to me.
It really does. you know, I don't. Honestly, I'm shocked, but I'm not shocked. That sounds like a very Ryan move.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Ryan. So Ryan, tell us a story with Ryan. How you got Ryan, and I'll tell you how I got Ryan.
it's just kind of it's so bizarre how it happened. I got a phone call from my grandmother, who is.
She's recruiting for you.
She's recruiting. So I'm still in Mississippi, getting ready to start a new season. And I get a phone call from my grandma, and she's living at a senior living facility. And she says, you know, I think I have someone who might want to come work for you. And I was like, one of the grandma. Like, who's going to move to Mississippi and come work for me? And she says, one of the servers here is in sports management in college. And I think he wants an internship or experience. And I said that you do something in sports, and that's, you're not wrong. And so, you know, I said, well, just have him email me. And so I gave her my email address, and, you know, Ryan sent me an email with his resume, and we went and we chatted and talked about, you know, where he wanted to go and what he wanted to do. And, I didn't think he was going to come down. I thought he was going to find something in St. Louis, 'cause he was at SEMO. And then I got an email back from him after I offered him the job, saying like, yeah, I'll be there. And I was like, man, grandma, one for one on recruiting. And so, yeah, so he ends up coming down, does an absolutely awesome job as one of our interns. And then he, I believe it was after that, that he came up and ended up working for you guys.
Yeah. I want to say that was probably because I think he came up after we were in the championship for football in 2014. So
yeah.
It had to be probably in 2014-ish, 14-ish. And yeah, he did a good job. He started, the only thing I remember is, I don't know if you ever met Brian Roth. He was my GM over there with the Ambush and stuff.
I ran into him a few times.
Okay, yeah. So B-Man interviewed him. He went to SEMO, and he's like a diehard SEMO nut.
Right.
Just look at his social media. And so when Ryan came in and he was from SEMO, I mean, Ryan could have came in like workout gear, or he could have came in with shirtless and he would have still got the gig. So Brian brought him on board. And I remember Ryan was kind of quiet guy.
Yep.
And, you know, it just, he like grew on me, you know. I think he probably started out maybe as like commission only or something. Like it might even been an internship. And then I think I had him start to do the merchandise because I felt comfortable with him. I was like, you know, you can organize it. I trust you with the money. And, you know, it just grew from there. And then when I moved to Florida to start the teams down here, you know, I basically promoted him and brought him down. And
yep.
And then he got too big and decided to go to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, where he's been for a while, and bought my season tickets from him.
There you go.
For the first year he was there. So
yeah,
I couldn't give away the tickets is the problem. Now, if I had them, I'd be able to make money, right? Yeah. With Tom Brady there, but no, it's cool. I mean, and that's, you know, like a guy like Ryan, and there's just dozens and dozens of them. Like I would definitely try to take anywhere, you know, if they're willing to go, because they work hard. He's a great worker. Great guy. I mean, he's like family. Mm-hmm. So even though he declined me for the show, that's okay.
We'll get him at some point.
Yeah. So tell me this. So you're in Memphis.
Yep.
I mean, South Haven, Mississippi, which is kind of like what, 20 minutes outside of Memphis?
If that, I mean, it borders.
Yeah. Borders. Did you end up living on the Tennessee side or the Memphis, Mississippi side?
I was on the Mississippi side. It was awesome. I was 2.5 minutes away from the rink. It was at zero commute. It was awesome.
It's a nice looking facility. I've never been in it, but I've seen it. I know we looked at putting a team there at one point, actually a few times. So
yeah, it's a really, really nice facility. It seats, I think it seats 8,200 is what it was at max capacity. So, or 8,400, but yeah, really, really well-kept, very, very nice facility, right off the highway. It was a great spot.
So tell me about your journey there. So you started out like kind of broadcasting. That's probably like an entry level role there. So how did you progress up in and kind of get that next opportunity within that?
It just was always being in the right place at the right time. I came in and I wanted to broadcast, and that's really all I wanted to do. And I will never forget, it was my second day there. And I'm in a staff meeting, and our owner is on the call. She's on a computer. She was remote at the time, and she's going around and she's, you know, asking everybody, so what are you doing to help the team? What are you doing this week to help the team? And I will never forget, 23 years old, looking at my new owner, and she's like, David, what are you going to do to help the team this week? And I'm just like, I have no idea. I'm going to be here. And I am, I'm going to do our social media, and I'm going to write press releases. I'm going to broadcast the game. And she was like, how is that going to bring us revenue? And you know, from that conversation on, it was always to me, how am I driving revenue? How is every position driving revenue? And so, as terrifying as that conversation was, it really did change my mindset moving forward, because I went from just being like, okay, I'm going to be a radio guy, to how is what I'm doing affecting the bottom line of the organization, which I think is something that is, it can be very, very much lost, especially on media people, of, you know, where, how do you fit into that bottom line conversation? And so, yeah, so I ended up doing that for 2 years. And then we had quite a bit of office turnover, and there were things that weren't getting done that needed to get done. There were sales things that needed to get done that weren't getting done. There were some game ops things that weren't getting done that needed to get done. And then at one point we were down to either two or three full-time staff members. And it was, I don't know, maybe 3 months before the season starts. But I mean, your hockey off seasons are so tight regardless. Right. So I remember going to our owner and saying, we need to hire people. These are the positions that I think we need to hire. And then we also need to have some sort of general manager or, you know, designated front office person that's in charge. And this was 2013, just before the 13-14 season. And, you know, she would fire back with, yeah, that sounds great. Go ahead and start, you know, hiring these people. And I said, well, what about the big dog, the person that's going to be here running the day to day? And she goes, well, why don't you do it? And I was like, no, not me. You know, I'm 24 years old. I have no idea what I'm doing. And as the conversation's going on, she's basically making me pitch her why I shouldn't do it. And I'm like, I'm young. I have no experience. I don't know what I'm doing. I'm learning on the fly, like all of these things. But she believed in me and saw something in me that I didn't see, that I didn't know, you know, that I had. And I ended up getting moved into director of business role. And I spent that season broadcasting and doing director of business. And then the next season just did the director of business role. And it was a really big challenge. And what I think it really taught me was, and looking to where I'm at now, is I had to learn to delegate. And I think that's the hardest thing when you go from any role into a manager role, right? Is delegating, especially if you've gone from, so like for me going in from broadcasting to business, I still wanted to write press releases. I still wanted to be involved in that part of the job, but that wasn't my role. And I needed to let some of the imperfections that right. were going on. Cause like, I can't go in and, you know, put commas in press releases or anything like that. That's not the role. And so, yeah. So then I was doing that. And then, I got promoted to general manager in 2016. And then, it was just time to move closer to home. And, when the job opened up, it was such a no-brainer for me to apply for it, especially with my wife and I looking to get married and move closer to somebody's family. And her family was in or is in Halifax, Nova Scotia. And so either be really, really cold. Yeah, or like really cold or be here. And but it just worked out to where, you know, this job opened up. She was going to graduate in 6 months. From optometry school. And so it made so much sense for where we were going to be next in our life. And, you know, it's also something too that I didn't think about. You know, if you would have told me at 22 that I was going to move out of a role because of family, when my whole goal when I was 22 was to be broadcaster in the NHL, right, I would have told you were crazy.
In a world where people are more aware and plugged in than ever, it's not enough to just have a great product. Consumers are looking for brands they can relate to. That's where Egghead Creative comes in. Everything they do is powered by deepening the connection with your brand. And every time you do business with them, they'll build a bespoke team of highly specialized creatives designed specifically around what you need. For more information, visit eggheadcreativestudio.com. That's E-G-G-H-E-A-D creativestudio.com. Or follow them on Instagram at Egghead Creative Studio. Now back to the show.
Yeah, well, that's the thing, is you just never know how things will, you know, end up or what opportunities will present themselves. So it's kind of cool. When you were in with the River Kings, were you there when it was owned by like a foundation?
Yes.
Okay. Yep. Okay. I I thought so. I wasn't sure if that was the whole time it was owned by that foundation or not.
They got them, I believe it was in 2002 for the 2002-2003 season. That part of it is so interesting, and it gave me so much knowledge. So much nonprofit foundation knowledge in my head that I don't even know what to do with it. Because that was such a unique experience to be in that world. And the different things that you have to balance and the regulation and rules that you have to make sure that you adhere to and maintain, and the communications. And there was a lot that you had to do outside of the regular just grind of the sports business. So then I get here and I'm asking all these questions, but I'm asking it from more of like a nonprofit foundational standpoint. And I'm getting like the side eye look from everybody. Like, what is this guy even talking about? I'm just going to shut up and just listen, just fly on the wall.
How was it, you know, any other like challenges that you had, you know, with the River Kings when you kind of, you know, maybe went to the GM spot? Was there any other like obstacles or things that you had as far as a learning curve?
Huge learning curve. And I think most of it just stemmed from really two things. One, I ended up being the general manager over people that were my supervisor when I was an intern.
So that's got to be tough. How did they handle that?
Some handled it really well. Others didn't. And I would say that others didn't would include me. Right. I was young for that role and I had to learn really fast. And unfortunately, it was probably more from mistakes than anything else. And I think that's why now, being in the role that I'm in now, it's so much, okay, you got to let mistakes happen because that's the way to learn. I can speak from my experience for hours on hours on hours, but until someone learns from that mistake, that's the best way to learn. And so that was a really, really important lesson for me to learn. It was really, really hard. And so then the other obstacle was just me not knowing what I didn't know and thinking that, you know, I'm a hot shot GM role and I know everything. And I didn't at all. And to now, you know, now be almost 3 years removed from that, or I guess now 4 years removed from that, that promotion, you know, I can look back at it now and just pick out different things, different ways that I handled, you know, all of these different situations wrong, and be able to apply them now to the staff that we have. It's incredible. I'll tell stories here about the way that I was in that role in Mississippi, and they're like, you did that? You never do that here. And I'm like, I know that because I learned through the gauntlet, through going trial by fire. And managing people is such a challenge, and people think it's so cool. Like, you're young, you're like, I'm going to be the GM. I'm going to be in charge of people. I'm going to hire people, fire people. It's going to be awesome. And it's not. There are definitely days that are incredibly, incredibly challenging. But, you know, it was really, really hard. It was really hard.
And I don't think, you know, there's no like book or manual on, you know, how to do it. And especially when you're on the leadership side, is, you know, you're dealing with so many different personalities and backgrounds. So, you know, each situation's a little different, but.
And especially in sports too, because you're working in two roles. You have your front office professional group of people that you're managing, but then you also have your players and your coaches who are usually ex-players. So you have to learn how to speak those languages really, really well, and be able to understand when you use your front office and when you use your operation side.
Yep.
And that for me was my biggest challenge. I was not able to balance that very well at all.
I think I struggled with just delegating, mm-hmm. and like, you know, because it's like you want everything to be perfect, right? So it's like, you know, you want to correct people or have to feel like, oh, I got to go do it. And so, you know, with my old age, you know, I've gotten a lot better with that. And, you know, people have to, I'm not going to do it for them.
Right.
You know, I'll help correct them and show them the proper way, but it does them no good or me no good if I go in and correct something without trying to help them learn it and just develop. So it's definitely fun. And now a little easier, but I used to always have to have my hands on everything.
Yep.
And I realized if I do that, I can only be so big.
Right.
I can only do so much that way. And, but that's where it comes back to, you know, having people that you can trust, just in general with getting the job done and making sure that you provide the resources and the assets for them to be successful. So, you know, no, I think that's cool. And you got to go back home, which is nice. I mean, I love, St. Louis area. My family talks about it a lot. My daughter graduated from, I want to say Timberland. Is it Timberland High School? So she graduated from high school there. You know, we loved it. We definitely would like to come back at some point and visit. It's like we went up there up and back for a year while we were living in Florida, and weather was great. You know what I mean? It was like, man, we went. I think we were up there for Thanksgiving that year.
Yep.
We went to like the zoo. St. Louis Zoo is a great zoo.
Right.
And it's like, man, this weather's not that bad. So fast forward, we move up that next summer.
Right.
And it's like the worst winter St. Louis has had in like years. It's like, great. No, but we used to do I sold out before you got there, but, you know, we had worked with the River City Rascals in the past a little bit with Dan Dial over there.
Yep.
You know, nice ballpark, you know, fun time. And, you know, most recently I got involved in baseball. So it kind of opened up my eyes because I've never been involved, in baseball. So it's like, wow, it's a whole nother animal.
It is.
And then add in what you're in now, the summer collegiate stuff. That's even more interesting. And, you know, I think the business model for the collegiate summer leagues are probably some of the best business models from a, you know, as an owner slash investor,
right?
Man, these are great models, and you see more and more popping up now than you did, you know, say 10 years ago.
Right. It's basically, you know, just in the same way that independent ball was popping up in the, you know, late 90s, early 2000s, you know, you're starting to see that now with summer collegiate. And you're right. I mean, the business model is it's a lot, it's a lot easier to work with. Your overhead is not as great. But yeah, I mean, just for me, from a personal standpoint, being able to move home was huge. I mean, that you don't get that opportunity in sports. You can, you know, you look at Ryan, who we're just talking about, he's in Florida. He's from, you know, Columbia, Illinois. I mean, a lot of the people that I hired when I was in Mississippi were not from the Memphis area. They were relocating from somewhere else. So it's such a unique thing to be able to work in your hometown. I mean, here right now we have four people full time. Two of us are from the area and the other two are not. They went to school close by and interned here. And that also goes back to the trust thing. I love to hire from within and really get that trust built from interns, move them into a front office role. And two, since you are a small staff, it does make it a lot easier on the training. They know all the policies and procedures. They understand the culture. They understand what you're going after. So being here and going from hockey to baseball, the whole different beast idea, you have so much more freedom with your facility, with your, with really everything, baseball to what you have in, you know, your more multi-purpose venue renting, or lease agreements. You don't have control over food and bev most of the time. You don't have control over extra events. You might have a date that's bumped for a concert or something else. Whereas here, what we have now is, you know, we control the lease. We control, or we don't control the lease. We control the extra events. And so we get to decide when things come in. We're not going to bump ourselves for something else unless it's something that's absolutely crazy. And you just have so much more flexibility that you're not as dependent on, man, I hope there are
tickets. Yeah.
Yeah. And I hope that, you know, the building didn't bring in 8 concerts during our, you know, during, you know, November to April, or we're completely screwed on our weekend dates. So yeah. It's such a different environment. And now being in this role, it's learning your food and beverage, learning maintenance, learning all those different things and field maintenance. I mean, I never would have thought that I would be learning field maintenance or any of that kind of stuff. Granted, we're fortunate to have a full turf field. So we no grass, no dirt, nice. Nothing. Yeah. It's awesome. And so it's learning that side of it. But it definitely does give you a lot more opportunity to be flexible and be creative. And really, you get to create more events for the community, as opposed to when you're in, you know, hockey or arena football or soccer, where you are basically, that's it. You are stuck with, you know, for where I was in hockey, you're 28 games and that was it. If you didn't make revenue in those 28 games,
you're sorry,
yeah. It was a bad year. Here, you know, we can pick up on stadium rentals. We can pick up on, you know, food and bev. We can pick up on so many different things.
Yeah.
And you can also leverage those things too with extra events and stuff. So it does really make for, I'm not going to say that it's easier, because it's not.
Oh, yeah. None are easy.
It's not at all, but
it the model itself,
flexibility.
Yeah. I mean, it definitely gives you more flexibility and, you know, I'd like to find a right market for it. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think if I did, that is probably one of the things I would get involved with, just seeing the baseball side of things. Obviously I know that it's not going to be like it will, you know. I was in Fredericksburg, Virginia. We were launching a brand new, you know, $35-40 million stadium. So, I mean, you know, I get it. It's not going to be quite like that, but it's,
right.
It's definitely, like you said, the challenge I've had with arena football is there's typically 7 to 8 home games.
Mm-hmm.
That's not many to make money. Indoor soccer, we were 10 to 13 home games. So, you know, hockey is a little bit better. How many games do you guys play in your baseball league?
We play 30.
Okay, so 15 home. Oh, 30 home. Okay.
Yeah, 30 home, 60 total.
That's almost like a perfect amount, too.
It really is. And then, too, you also have – and since you have the facility and it's not – this isn't – not every team obviously has the same lease structure. I mean, we have some teams in our league that only have their lease from, you know, first pitch to the end of the season or whatever. But, you know, the lease agreement that we have here is we operate the facility. And so, you know, you now have on the front end from, you know, January 1 to end of May – to do whatever you want to do in there. And then after it, August 15th ish, all the way to, you know, the end of the calendar year there. And you can really do with the turf field too. You can do so much.
Have you guys, I looked at buying the Rascals back in probably 2014. And this was before the turf, cause we were talking to the city about turf and a video board, which I don't know if you got. Did you get the video board yet? No.
Nope. Old school manual scoreboard.
Yeah. So those were two things we were negotiating about. But one of the things we were interested in is adding a soccer team in there or other sports. Have you guys done any like other sporting events out there now that you have turf?
We've done a lot of youth stuff. We haven't done anything on like any kind of major pro or anything like that. Mm-hmm. But this year we introduced soccer to the facility. Nice. So we run, there's the St. Louis Youth Soccer Association, and different clubs will come out and have games. So we've got enough space to run 7v7 and 9v9 concurrently. And so they'll be here from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. And so we'll run that, you know, 5, 6, 7 weekends a year. And it's typically during a time when baseball tournaments aren't happening. So it really fills in those time slots really, really nicely. You know, we had talked about doing a full soccer field, but I think we're like 10 feet short
of a
full soccer field.
When we looked at it, we would have had to get approval to modify the size a little bit. And I think it was within range, but it definitely had a little bit of that. So tell me this. So you're with the Rascals on the pro side, now the collegiate side. Mm-hmm. What kind of differences, you know, have there been for you?
I really don't think there's been a whole lot, honestly. I mean, we operate really in the same way. You're still operating a baseball team. You're still operating a baseball facility. I think the biggest thing the biggest change, has just been the ability to utilize the field and the facility in different ways. That has been the biggest thing, is that it opens us up to do a lot of different things. You know, I think on the pro side, you are, and this is, again, this is just purely on the scheduling side. On the scheduling side in pro, in the Frontier League, you're running, you know, your normal homestands. You play Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, a 3-game homestand, and then Friday, Saturday, Sunday, travel day, Monday. With the Prospect League and the summer college schedules, it's a little bit more similar to, a hockey schedule, where you might play one game and come home because you're so much more regionally tied together. So we have a team in Alton, Illinois, which is 40 minutes down the road. So we can play home and homes with Alton. We can play home and homes with Cape Girardeau. It makes it really easy to be able to do those things. And then two, since you have those days that you're maybe instead of having a 15-game homestand because you have blackout dates elsewhere, now you have home and homes. Now your season ticket holders don't have, you know, they're not looking at, I got to be at the ballpark 15 days in a row. It makes it a little bit more digestible from that standpoint. And also on your staff, it's a lot less wear and tear on those 15 game homestands. I don't wish them on anybody. Those are a grind.
Those are rough.
that's the biggest difference from, you know, how we operate, is just the ability to be more creative with how we utilize the ballpark as a multi-purpose facility, as opposed to just a ballpark. It's a stadium, not a ballpark.
Yeah, no, that's the key, is multi-purpose. How would you say, like, and maybe not specifically your team, mm-hmm. but like, what's the average budget in the league? Like, what kind of expenses are there? And like, how's that compared to like the hockey league?
Yeah, God, it's been so long since I've even looked at what the hockey budget would look like. I would say that, you know, it's a little bit lower than what we were doing in pro when we were in the Frontier League, and it's a little bit lower than what we were doing in hockey. And I think it just comes there. I mean, there's a couple of reasons for that. Again, we talked about the overhead earlier, with players and all that sort of stuff. And then two, on your, and not, this isn't necessarily to say from the Rascals to the Hoots, but it's more from hockey to where we're at now. Your lease structure is so different that you can't even look at, you know, dollars and cents in and out as being equal, because, you know, just like we were talking about before, you know, what you're paying for in your rent in hockey is just for the games. What you're paying for your rent in baseball, or where we're at here, is for use of the facility. So you can't look at dollars and cents and say, okay, I was paying this here and this here, it's, you know, I got a better, the agreement was better here. Right. That's not even close. Yeah. It's because of, you know, what you actually have access to. So, I mean, it's, budgets are a little bit It's a little bit more flexible, but still at the end of the day, it's still minor league sports, and you're scraping for, I mean, you're grinding for everything that you can get. I don't think that changes whether you're in, summer pro or, summer college, or if you're in, minor pro or whatever. You know, you still have, the mentality is still the same,
right?
No matter what.
How have, haven't played a season yet for the Hoots yet, have you? Like, because of COVID, or what'd you guys end up doing?
We ended up doing a pod, similar to, you know, what a lot of the other, what some other places did. So we just played, but we played all of our games here. We ended up putting together a 16 league. We called it the CarShield Collegiate League. We had a team in here that was called the Hoots, and they did end up winning, which was not set up. It worked out so great that it was 1-2 playing the final game of the regular season against each other. We didn't have a playoff. It was just English Premier League style. If you win, you know, if you win out the league, then you win the championship. And we got lucky and it came down to the last game. But we did that, and we played 90 games in 45 days.
Wow.
It was a lot. It was a lot. But it was successful enough to where when we started putting together what we were going to do for this year, it was, look, there are players that want to play. We have the facility time. We can do both. We can do a prospect league and we can do a CarShield Collegiate League again. You know, as we were talking about earlier about the dates and all that sort of stuff, like what do you have available? How many weekend dates? We don't have to worry about that now because we can just say, okay, whenever the Hoots are out of town, we got a CarShield game that night. So we're not worried about how many Fridays or Saturdays or whatever we get on the calendar. Of course, we still want to get as many, you know, prospect league games on those Fridays and Saturdays, but it's not necessarily now a situation where it's do or die, because so many teams live and die on how they do on Friday and Saturday. And now to not really have to have as much pressure on that, it's
huge. That's nice. And I would take it too. I mean, a lot of people I would think would, you know, I could hear somebody saying, oh, well, you know, the fan support will be less, but the way I look at it is the fans that are coming out are, the ones I've seen at the game, a lot of them are families, you know, tons right. of families. And so they're looking for stuff to do in the community. Mm-hmm. I don't think they really care if the guys are pro or if they're in college. I mean, right. even the college guys, I mean, it's some great baseball and these are future, you know, stars. So has that kind of hindered you guys at all? Or have you gotten any flack?
You always have your diehards. There was a large contingency of rascal diehards that had been with the team since 1999, and that was their team. And I get that. I respect that. I mean, if that's your team, that's your team. You don't want to see somebody else come in and play on the same field that you won a championship on. And so I got that. I understood that. Some of those folks came over and, you know, are now Hoots fans, and some of them aren't. But I mean, at the end of the day, we're entertainment.
Yeah.
We have baseball game going on, and that's, you know, the medium for the entertainment. But you know, it's a family night out. It's supposed to be a fun night out. And you're going to watch some good baseball in the background, still have the crazy promotions, still have all the, you know, cheap food, you know, cheap drinks, come out, have a good time. And have a great time out with your family. And that doesn't change from indie ball to minor league to, I mean, even the majors. I mean, that's at the end of the day, you want to provide the entertainment. That's the stuff that you can control. I can't, I told our staff this last year when we brought in a bunch of new folks to start the Hoots. I don't care if we win or lose. And that's not me as a fan, because I want us to win. I want to win. I want to watch a winner every game.
Business. You want, you know, make sure the entertainment and the value is is first.
Right, because I can't make a pitcher throw a perfect 12-6 curveball.
No.
I can't. But I can make sure that our customer service at the box office is top-notch. I can control that. I can control, you know, what happens in our concession stands. I can control, you know, execution of sponsorships. I can control that. I can't be out there and make our shortstop make the, you know, turn a double play or make the throw over to first or anything like that.
So how did the name Hoots come about? Were you involved in that process?
I was to a small degree. So the franchise was a relocated franchise from Hannibal. Okay. So it was the Hannibal Hoots, and gotcha. They were moving the Hannibal franchise to O'Fallon. And I mean, we talked about it pretty extensively about what we were going to do, but did end up deciding, you know, the logo package is fantastic. You can see the hat back there. It's a great package.
It's like your Mississippi colors though, too. Did you have a hand in that?
It worked out really well. I can recycle all of my old black and gold stuff.
Right.
but it's just a great look. And so, I mean, at the end of the day, when we made the decision to stick with it, there wasn't any argument.
All right. So since you're in my old stomping grounds, let's talk about food.
Let's do it.
What kind of, what are your spots that you like to frequent in the region there?
So my wife and I, we live out in Wentzville. And so, there's a newish place that opened up, near us. It's called the Grotto Grill. I'm not sure if I don't believe it was around when you were here. Unbelievable. Great spot. We're big fans. There's a couple of breweries, Friendship Brewing in Wentzville, delicious. Petrichor Brewing just opened up in O'Fallon. They're really good. Ethel's Barbecue in O'Fallon.
I was going to ask if there's any barbecue spots that you like.
Yeah, Ethel's.
I never had that.
Okay. And then Sugar Fire.
Sugar Fire. Yeah, I used to live right by Sugar Fire. Man, I used to go to that place all the time.
That's a dangerous spot. And that was one of the things when we were moving back from, Mississippi, Memphis area, it was barbecue. We were like, we've been so spoiled. Barbecue. Where are we going to go to get some good barbecue? And, we had a lot of friends that talked up Sugar Fire, and my wife and I were like, it's a chain. It's not Memphis barbecue. And we went down there and we had it one time and I was like, this is so good.
My daughter, she lives in Tampa now. She's 23. She was like, Dad, you're not going to believe this. Sugar Fire is opening up a location in Jacksonville.
Really?
So she's like, let's just go when they open. And I was like, it's like 2 hours for me, maybe three for her. But I was like, all right, let's do it. Let's get awesome. So I like that. We also, I like, these are like little things. They're not great places, but like, Lion's Choice.
Yes.
There's no Lion's Choice anywhere else.
Nope. Emo's.
I hate the St. Louis pizza though. No. That's, you're from there, so I get it. The pizza I like is right next to like close to Veta off mid rivers.
Okay.
There. I think it's Racanelli's.
Okay. Yeah.
Now that pizza is probably, you know, the best. But yeah, everybody up there loves the Emo's and
absolutely.
I just couldn't get into it. So any cool food items that you guys have at the stadium? Because I know before you guys would have some crazy stuff. Like
they had a burger that was called the Arch Nemesis. It had a grilled chicken patty, bacon, a quarter pound patty. I know that was something that we had before. That is something that we are working on now. We've got a few meetings with our food supplier to come up with, you know, what's going to be a Hoot specific signature food item. We have a partnership with a local ice cream shop, and they make all their own custom ice cream. So they're going to be making a few Hoots branded ice creams, both alcoholic and non-alcoholic. So we've got we got some really cool things that we're working on now on the food and bev side, because you know, we've got competition in the area with Gateway and their, you know, baseball's greatest burger with the Krispy Kreme donut and all that, which looks, it just looks insane. It looks insane. That's all I can say.
So how is the season looking for you guys with COVID and everything in Missouri? Will you, is it looking like you're going to have a normal season? Will, you know, is it still up in the air? Is your schedule out?
Schedule's not out. We're meeting, I believe we meet later this week, to talk more about what the schedule will look like. As of right now, we are planning normal. One thing that we did last year with all the changes and everything was we reduced capacity and mandated social distancing throughout the ballpark. So we closed down rows, we closed down specific seats, and we went to a general admission ticketing structure. So you could sit anywhere other than suites. And as I don't know what the right word would be, but I was always of the idea, you have to have your own seat. Like, this is my seat. My seat is section 100, row A, seat 4. Like, that was always my thing. And then when we went through last year, I really just started questioning it. Is that necessarily the right thing to do? Especially when your ticket prices are so, they're so close in price that it almost doesn't matter. You know, when you're at the, you know, when I go to a Blues game, the difference between sitting on the glass and sitting 8 rows up is so different that it makes no sense to right. do that. But when your ticket fluctuates $1 from the lawn to bleacher seats, like, yeah. is there really a point to do it? And so we decided this year we were going to stick with the general admission, not because of any pricing thing, but just in case there is something that comes up and we mm-hmm. do need to make a switch. Our season ticket holders will get to have their own seats. But in case we do need to reduce capacity, in case we do have to have social distancing throughout the ballpark, which I'm not even going to try to predict the future at this point.
Yeah, you'll lose that one probably.
Yeah. so we can be flexible and be able to pivot easier. Leaving the ballpark in a general admission capacity was the easiest thing for us to do, as opposed to starting to sell groups, starting to sell tickets, and then have to call them back and say, hey, instead of having your own seat, you know, it's going to be general admission, or season ticket holders, hey, we got to move you here, XYZ spot. Let's just plan for it to be the most flexible that we can, and then just go from there. If it works out and ends up being something that we want to keep doing, then we can keep doing it. If it's something that, you know, we get a lot of flack of and we need to change, I mean, we will always listen to what the fan says. You know, that's
the key. I mean, you have to if you want to be around
right. in
the long term.
That's really our entire mantra here is we're for the fan. You know, so we listen, we take the advice. And we adjust where we need to adjust to make sure that we're putting together the best, putting together the best product and the best experience for our fans and their families.
No, I think that's the right way to do it. So, I appreciate you joining me. It was fun kind of chatting about that journey. I mean, I know we've exchanged some emails over the years and have that common Ryan, even though he won't join me on the show. He's too big time now.
Too big time.
But no, I appreciate it, man. Good luck this upcoming season, and let's keep in touch.
Absolutely. Thank you, Andrew.
Hey, podcast fans. Thanks for listening to today's episode of The Andrew Haynes Show. If you enjoyed it, be sure to leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. If you have any questions, be sure to reach out to Andrew on LinkedIn. We'll see you next time.